This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Grant and Danny, 106.7 The Fan. At 11:45 today, our double play. What's going on in our lives? Nothing to do with sports. List came out I saw yesterday of the best TV characters from TV shows ever. Want to see what you think of the top 10 that they put together, and we'll reorganize ours. Craig Hoffman is our Redskins beat reporter. Joins us on the Mattress Warehouse hotline right now. Craig did a lengthy, great, thorough interview with Trent Williams. Was finally, only in a couple places, started talking about what went wrong between he and the Redskins, and we've got all kinds of terrific content and some exclusive insight into his bout with Bruce Allen in Washington, and Craig joins us now. Craig, so take us through kind of how that went down and some of what people will find when they go to thefandc.com.
So I got a text from a source Friday morning who's close to Trent that said, hey, I think he's got some more to say after the Redskins put him on NFI. And I would say 10 minutes after that, saw the piece go out with Mike Jones. And obviously at that point, Mike had already talked to Trent and said plenty in that piece. And it's a great job by Mike to get some more detail than we had even gotten the week before. But there were still unanswered questions. I've known a lot about this story for a long time. There's a lot of stuff that I've heard that I believe that I needed it from Trent's mouth to be able to publish it. And so I reached out to Trent and said, hey, man, I've got some more follow-ups. I've got some questions. Can we chat? And, you know, figured, you know, after a couple more texts, he just called me. And that what ensued was the conversation that happened that at this point, I think a lot of listeners have heard chunks of. And the interview that we put into this piece of thefandc.com. And what's in there is there's a ton, obviously, from a nearly 30-minute conversation. But the biggest stuff that came out to me was, one, he didn't know that the growth on his head was cancerous until after it was off of his head, which stunned me, because like, I was kind of under the impression, for as much as I did know, that last year he was starting to get real nervous about it and that it was starting to hurt him and all that kind of stuff. And he said, no, it's not like I was for 5.5 years thinking this thing was something and they were telling me no. I was sick and tired of this bump on my head because it was ugly. Like, I got it removed because it was cosmetic. And he kind of got lucky that the plastic surgeon that was removing it said, like, dude, I don't think this is a cyst. You should get this checked out. And eventually they did and found out it was cancer. And that's kind of when Trent's anger, I think, started in reality with this organization, was how they treated it after someone else was like, hey, this is probably not a cyst. And eventually they found out that it was a cyst, even at that point, that it was cancerous. You know, after that initial, I guess that second test, after it had been removed, the Redskins doctors called him and said, yeah, it's not a big deal. Like, you should get it checked out, but, you know, what we'll see. And then they find out it's cancer. So the nonchalance there, and some of the other ways that the organization has acted since, I think that was the biggest stuff, and some of the timeline kind of becoming clarified. And the other big thing is, I asked him directly, you know, is this about the money? Or what do you say to the people that say it's about the money? Because you have forfeited $13 million. And he said, yeah, I mean, I don't really get that, because had this all been all about the money, I would have just showed up and I would have found out, you know, I would have, in his words, secured the bag that way. I would have figured out how to get my money and also not play or make it well known, you know, that it was contentious or whatever. He really thought that by staying silent throughout the entire spring and summer and into the point where they didn't trade him, that they would do right by him and they would trade him, and that by being a good soldier and not saying anything and not speaking up, that they would give him what he wanted in terms of leaving. And once they didn't do that, he felt the need to speak up. And, you know, the other thing that's adjacent to that is Bruce Allen's quote in this, which is just stunning, that he said that he can't pass a physical. How is he supposed to get traded? Which is disingenuous and flat out wrong.
Craig, and the stories at thefandc.com, it's great. And you did an awesome job with this, and it's very thorough. I was talking to a buddy this past weekend, and I realized I didn't have an answer for something, and I wanted to get your sense of this thing. Mm-hmm. If the bridge is burned, which is what it sounds like, if it's not going to happen here in Washington, which is what it sounds like, and he's felt that way for some time, talking about Trent Williams, the thing that I can't figure out, and we couldn't kind of get to the bottom of, is there was also this ask for a contract extension so he could retire as a Redskin. Help me and others kind of quantify that and help us understand that.
That was before all of this.
Okay.
Like, at the very beginning of last offseason, Trent wanted a new contract, which is something he has never denied and something that he talks about in this story. And it's a good question because I think the timeline gets a little confusing for people. So Trent asks after the season, before he's getting this growth on his head removed because it's ugly and it's cosmetic, that he wants a new contract. He has no guaranteed money. At this point, he's like the sixth or seventh highest paid tackle in the league, and he thinks he's the best one. And that's up for debate, you know, in terms of his skill level and, oh, but you've also been hurt, yada, yada. That's kind of a separate argument. But he wanted a new contract and sat down with Bruce and was like, I want this. And Bruce said no. After that is the medical situation. And that's when the dynamic of everything changed. And that's when the bridges were burned and everything became irreparable, was how the medical stuff was handled. So yes, he wanted a new contract. I think there was even a point where some of the medical stuff had happened that the relationship was still repairable, that he wasn't so upset yet, that he was upset but willing to, hey, if you make it right, if you give me the contract I want, and apologize and not even publicly, just privately, because Trent hadn't said anything publicly at that point. But if privately they had said, hey, we really screwed this up, we're so sorry, you know, we hope that you'll take us back eventually, then I think that would have gone a long way. Instead, none of that happened, and they started leaking stuff out to the contrary, that he was lying and he was unreliable and all this kind of stuff. And that's when the bridge got burned in finality.
Craig Hoffman's with us on Grant and Danny. I thought the interview was great, and if people have not heard either the clips or seen it in print, we did a really good job as a website too, thefandc.com, with the transcript as well, which I read. It's all worth your time. So it's hard for me because here's what I would say. I worked with Trent and was on the beat with him for 4 years. I love him. He's one of my favorite players I ever covered. I think he's an awesome guy. And I defer to players over this team in terms of trustworthiness almost every single time. But I'll say this really quickly, and I want to get your reaction. And I think I speak for plenty of people. He has all the answers, right? And they all make sense. And if you just believe him and take him at his word, then he is a victim every step of the way, and the team screwed him over every step of the way. Now, whether it's the contract thing, I guess we believe that he never addressed the contract once after his operation. Okay, I'll believe that. The second opinion thing's hard for me. I understand that he's saying, I never thought it was cancer. If I had a growth that was painful on my head for several years, there's just no way.
It wasn't painful. It was just ugly.
Well, that's what he said in your thing. I've heard otherwise. But let's say that we're now taking him at that word, even though I've heard differently. That's fine. If I had an ugly growth on my head that was growing for several years, I would get it looked at a couple times over. That's just me. You could say differently. Sure. And then the last one is the appointments that he missed. You know, he said, I missed it by a day. I saw that in the Mike Jones thing. Did you guys talk about that as well?
No, we didn't. I kind of let that, you know, Mike had already addressed that. I didn't feel the need
it was
back.
A Thursday appointment. I went on a Friday, whatever it was. And people I've talked to with the team have used it plurally, appointments. But let's just say he missed it by a day. I think there's probably another side of this, too, that the team either can't say or because they continually have botched this every step of the way, has neglected to say, and they should. It doesn't get into his medical records, where they could present their other side of it. I'm just saying I think there's probably more team-friendly content that we haven't heard yet, perhaps.
Perhaps. But to me, it doesn't really excuse the way they've acted. And I think what Trent says makes sense. Is there a level of naivete to Trent's whole situation with the thing on his head? Yeah, not getting a second opinion. And there were people around him that were pushing him to do that. But Trent's a football player who really, really likes football. Like, remember, this is a guy, and we talked about this in the story as well, like how his knee and his thumb, the thing with his thumb that we have in the story is insane. We don't need to really get into that now, but the way they botched his thumb injury was unbelievable. But remember, like, he was playing on a knee that was like barely held in place because that's who Trent is. Like that is his mentality. If I can go out there and play, I'm going to play. So there were other times where maybe he could have gotten the growth taken off and he was like, it would screw up my season. It would screw up my training. It's an inconvenience. I don't really want to do it. And then it just got to the point where it was so damn ugly that he was like, I can't do this anymore. I'm getting this thing taken off my head. And it wasn't until it was literally off of his head or he was in the surgery to get it taken off that there was concern that it was malignant in any way. So yes, it was ugly. Yes, I think I would have certainly gotten a second opinion. I think it's a very reasonable thing to say. But to get caught up in that seems kind of like that's not really what he's upset about. Like, yes, he wishes the doctors had been better at their jobs. That is certainly part of it. But the nonchalance after another, like when essentially he gets the second opinion and they're still like, it's not a big deal. And the other doctors already called him kind of freaking out, telling him, I think this is a tumor. Like, that's what pisses him off. And then the fact that, you know, did you guys follow the Dion Waiters situation over the weekend?
Yeah.
It's a weird like parallel, crazy. But like, so for those that are listening that don't know, Dion Waiters, he was a guard for the Miami Heat, took a gummy, like a weed gummy from one of his teammates. And it was a bad gummy and he had a panic attack on a plane. And the Miami Heat statement about that, in which they suspend him 10 games because Dion's also otherwise been a pain in the ass this year, is more like shares more concern for Dion, who took a bad gummy on a team plane, like, it shows care for the fact that he had a panic attack and disappointment, but also that, again, like empathy and human reaction, than anything that has come out of Redskins Park about Trent Williams, who had cancer and almost died. And that, if I am Trent, is the thing I can't get over. Is sure, maybe I've had some conversations with Dan Snyder, who is sympathetic, and that is why I think Trent has been kind to Dan. But the lack of public or even from what I know, private empathy for a guy that was mere weeks from having a type of cancer that was incurable because it was on his head and could have gotten his skull and thus his brain is unforgivable to me and certainly I would think to Trent and those around him. That is why he is upset above all else. So yes, all this other stuff can be kind of like tentacles on this thing, but like the heart of it all, those are side dishes. The main course here is he almost died and they have yet to like even acknowledge that in any kind of way, seemingly publicly or privately.
Greg, it's great work, man. It's thefandc.com. The story is up. It's very thorough. Awesome job, buddy. Appreciate the time.
Thank you, Danny. Thanks, Grant.
Yeah, you got it, buddy. Thefandc.com. Go get that content right now. G&D on the Fan. Before we get into what an amazing year Preston Smith is having with the Packers since leaving Washington.
It's not annoying in any way.
We can do later in the hour. GM meetings have started for Major League Baseball. The Nationals have two players hitting free agency that are among the three best on the entire market. Steven Strasburg and Anthony Rendon. We'll get into that next on The Fan.
We are Grant and Danny for our friends at Window Nation. We love these guys. It's awesome. The cold air, it's on the way. It's happening. It's happening very, very soon, as a matter of fact. So what do you need to do? You need to call Window Nation and get your windows taken care of. I had a condo GP years ago, and the building was old, and the windows were old too, and my heating bills every winter starting around now just to keep the place a comfortable temperature, astronomical. Window Nation came, fixed all that, and those windows kept me nice and warm and snug all winter long, tax credit, increased the value of the home, and got myself a little bit lower energy bills every month.
I'm taking care of all the windows in my house that I didn't previously. The first time I got Window Nation to come and take care of all the downstairs windows and doors. Right now, you can buy two, get two free. Plus, get 0% financing for 60 months. I've got them coming out to the house again tomorrow. It is getting cold. The weather right now, you'll check it out. We got snow in the forecast for the first time. It's about to be frigid and gross and nasty. Get your windows installed right now. Over 150,000 windows last year. 99.5% of the time, Window Nation didn't need to go back. Didn't need to follow anything up. They did it right the first time. Buy two, get two free. 0% financing for 60 months. Tell them Grant and Danny sent you. Call 866-90-NATION. WindowNation.com. 866-90-NATION. Major League Baseball general manager meetings are underway today out in Scottsdale, Arizona. Officially kicking off free agency in the offseason. This is an opportunity for all the executives to get together and to exchange conversation, information, and And you just get everyone under one roof and meet. Literally, just like the winter meetings, which come closer to the holidays, which are when most of the business of the offseason gets done. If you're an agent in Major League Baseball repping a player, if you are an executive in Major League Baseball who is trying to get a deal done for a guy, you're there. So it stands to reason a lot happens very quickly. The Nats, if you're looking at just the rankings of the best available free agents in the sport this offseason, have two of the top three guys potentially leaving their building, hitting the market. Steven Strasburg, who opted out of his contract after a memorable October that saw him become the first pitcher in the history of the Major League Baseball playoffs to go 5-0 with an incredible run. Started out of the bullpen in the wild card series, then twice as a starter in the division series, a nails NLCS outing, and two dominant World Series starts head-to-head against Justin Verlander and two Nationals wins. And Anthony Rendon, your team MVP this year, coming off 34 home runs, a team record in runs batted in, a 1,000 OPS, by far the best bat on the market. There really isn't a Robin to his Batman. It's not that close. So only Gerrit Cole is better than those two guys. If you're ranking in any capacity the top five free agents in baseball, Danny, two of the top three are Nats, man.
Yeah. It's those are the headliners. And then they're the guys that are, you know, sort of Nationals heroes. Howie Kendrick is a headliner because he was the, you know, NLDS MVP, hit the home run in game seven. The most influential moment in that whole series was right there. It changed everything about it. A cutter down and away on the black. That I think, you know, league-wide batting average is probably like 0.56 on that. Balls don't get hit hard on that. Guys usually take it and hope that it's a ball. Not only did he not take it, but he homered on it and changed everything, giving the Nationals the World Series. Howie Kendrick is a fine for somebody. You're going to have to pay that I was awesome in the playoff tax if you want him listed as a first baseman, but probably a designated hitter. So the point is, the Nats are rich here on this free agent wish list for some teams. You're going to want guys that were part of that. Maybe you pay a premium if you're a team that's on the rise, right? You give those guys maybe a little bit more than you might if you just look at their standard production because they were part of a great clubhouse.
Yeah, when your team wins, all of a sudden, to your point, the other teams look and say, we need a little bit of that.
Whatever ingredients
magic
that
dust.
Are, yeah.
We need a little bit of what they had. He can bring that to our clubhouse. So that's a big part of it for the second-tier guys. I am still very much, I won't say I'm sure, but I'm confident that the Nationals keep Steven Strasburg. I think if he goes anywhere, he'll go home to San Diego. The one thing to that, though, is he's made D.C. his home now. He sold his place in San Diego. He's moved his family here. Now, you grow up somewhere. You live there your entire life. It's gorgeous. I don't know how many people listening have been to San Diego before.
It's breathtaking.
In terms of dealing with the traffic and the hustle and bustle of the city and weather, it's tough to try to stack up with San Diego. But if he stays here, he's got a chance potentially to win another World Series in the near future. The Padres are certainly on the ascent. They've turned a corner toward competitiveness. They're spending some money. They've got new ownership the last couple of years. That's a quality organization. But if it's not San Diego, I have a hard time believing he's just leaving here to go somewhere else to get paid. Rendon is more interesting because Rendon seems like home is way more important to him, and home is not D.C. to him. He didn't move his family here. About 6 minutes after the season, I'm assuming he was on a flight back to Houston because he wasn't at the Caps game the next night. He wasn't at the White House. He hasn't been around for the other team stuff that took place. And that's not a bad thing. That's not to knock Anthony Rendon.
It's not unusual at all.
But he's a Texas guy through and through. The Rangers need a third baseman and have money. There's a bunch of other teams, even in the division, like the Mets and the Braves, who might be looking for third base help who can spend. I still say there's a 75, you know, 60, something like that percent chance, 65% that he's not back.
Yeah, I think it's 80, but that's where I'm at. If I'm the Rangers, I'm moving into a new ballpark next year. That's my centerpiece. That's what I'm doing. I will not lose a bidding war. I don't care who's involved. I don't care if it's the Mets. I don't care if it's the Dodgers who've got this sneaky plan to break the AAV record, to move Justin Turner to first base, whatever. I will not lose that bidding if I'm Texas, if I'm the Rangers. No way.
What do you guys think about the winter meeting starting, free agency getting underway, and the possibility of bringing back both Strasburg and Rendon? Any chance they do it? If you got to prioritize between the two, who would you want back? 800-636-1067. 800-636-1067. Also, I want to pass along something I saw this weekend about a couple of big names the Nats could actually make a push for in free agency that aren't Rendon and Strasburg if they're losing one or two of those guys and they've got some money to throw around. So we'll do that next, and we'll get into the amazing season of a departed Redskin in the NFC who is just tearing teams apart. Grant and Danny on The Fan.
Double play in 10 minutes. Best TV characters of all time. There was a ranking done, caught our attention. We'll give you the top 10 as they put it together, and we'll try to see what they hit on and missed on. I saw this yesterday, though, and would be remiss if we didn't bring this up. So I was watching the Packers and the Panthers. Preston Smith was super impactful in the game. Green Bay got a huge win. They're 8-2, by the way. I'm not really sure how they lost that game last week to the Chargers as badly as they did. That was their mulligan for the season, maybe. But they're really good.
They are good. Their other loss to Philadelphia. Remember, a game they should have won. They had a million chances inside the red zone and didn't, despite the fact that Philadelphia found something where they could run whenever they wanted, wherever they wanted. And Jordan Howard had a day. Sanders had a day. Philadelphia didn't deserve to lose that game by any stretch. It was back and forth. But Green Bay had a trillion chances inside the red zone, inside really the 5-6 yard line, whatever it was, and couldn't score. A couple turnovers, came away with nothing. But those are their two quote-unquote bad games. I'll take that, though. That's what a 12-win team looks like, right?
Yeah. I mean, they could be 10-0 by what you're saying. Now, I guess we could go back and find some losses, too. They beat the Lions by 1 point.
Should have lost that one, probably.
Probably could have lost that. They beat the Chiefs in a one-possession game. That 5-point loss, 5-point win against the Vikings could have easily been a loss. That was Kirk Cousins' worst game by far of the season. And then they beat the Bears, remember. If we're saying that Eagles game they should have won, the Bears probably should have won that game if Mitch Trubisky did anything in the red zone a couple of times in week one. But regardless, they're 8-2. And I bring this up because after 2 sacks yesterday, Preston Smith has 3 sacks the last 2 weeks. He has 10 sacks through 10 games.
Yeah, he does.
He's on pace for 16 sacks. He was in Washington for 4 years. He never had more than 8. And his 8, even though they all count, you know, we don't go through everyone's total and say, well, you had 2.5 in one game or you had 3 against a bad tackle.
They were very Arakpoian.
They were. They were just kind of in games either that didn't matter as much. And I don't normally knock guys for this. If you get sacks, you get sacks. It's hard to do. But think about his sack totals for 4 years. As a rookie, 8. And he had 3 in a December game against the Eagles. Had 5 going into week 16. He had 4.5 the next year. So he goes pretty decent. Down. 2017, his third year, pretty decent. 8 sacks. Fourth season, contract year, down to 4 sacks. I was beating the drum as loud as I could for not paying him, for him not being worth elite pass rushing money. He got paid, just as an example, more than Ryan Kerrigan makes because he got paid a few years after Ryan Kerrigan did.
Right.
And when you're a starting every down, stand up outside linebacker, pass rusher in a 34 scheme, who can go out and give you 7.5, 8, 9 sacks, you get paid pretty handsomely. He got paid like the Packers thought he was going to go be a 12-sack-a-year guy, and I thought they completely overpaid him.
I go, look at you, stupids. Nope.
But I get why they did it, even at the time, because, you know, again, it's an important position. You have to project. You got to pay for services not yet rendered, not numbers already produced. But darn if they're not right, and I wasn't wrong. In addition to 10 sacks, by the way, he's got 3 defended passes. He's on pace for a record in terms of batted balls at the line of scrimmage. He's already picked off a pass. He only picked off more than one pass once here in Washington. He's got a sack fumble. Now, he's only got one. He's never really been good at that, but he hasn't had more than that with the Redskins since his rookie year in 2015. He is having, in every sense of the word, a career year after leaving Washington. You kind of add him to the pile. So it's twofold for me. One, I was wrong, and I'd like to just put my hand in the air and say, whoops, my bad.
My hand's up.
And two, how's it happening now? It just seems to me like they have him pinning his ears back and rushing more than the Redskins did. He used to cover a lot here, which I never really understood.
9 tackles for a loss as well. 18 quarterback hits, better than the guys that are above him in the list of sacks. Shaquille Barrett is a stud, a guy nobody talks about. Chandler Jones has been great for a long time and never gets the credit he deserves out in the desert. He's tied with Myles Garrett. He's right there ahead of guys like T.J. Watt, Danielle Hunter, Joey Bosa. He's a badass. Preston Smith's playing great. And it's a usage thing. And I've always, and again, listen, Preston Smith has his faults. He's not exceptional. He's not the complete superstar, all pro, all caliber, all world. No matter what system he's in, he's going to be great. But you put him in the right spot, yada, 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 you can get great production. I never felt like it was right with Washington. I'm not smart enough to know what that is, by the way. I said, do what he did in college, which is line up at defensive tackle. One play defensive, and the next play, stand up linebacker, the play after that. You never know where he was coming from, and he wreaked havoc. I don't know if you can do that at this level. But I also know that you had this weapon that they couldn't quite figure out how to deploy because they had to do something else that seemed to be more important to them. Frustrating. Green Bay, that defense is pretty good. It's not great, but it's pretty good, and they're letting him eat, and this is what it looks like. This, to me, is the ceiling. What production they're getting from him. It's unbelievable.
I think every team can do this. Every fan base can do this. I really do. Where you watch football all day during your bye week, and you see a bunch of guys who played on your team succeeding. But here is what I know. I know that Jamison Crowder, who caught a touchdown and went for 81 yards yesterday, is on pace for 85 catches and around 800 yards this season. Now, he is a possession dude. He's not a big play threat, certainly not in the way the Jets are using him. He's going to be right around 12 yards per catch, I'd say, when his career is all said and done. I think he's at 11 and a half now. Maybe he's even closer to 10, which is what he's at this season. But who's better in your receiving core, other than Terry McLaurin, than Jamison Crowder? We heard a lot about Trey Quinn coming into the season and how, well, you don't need to pay Crowder. You've got Trey Quinn. Trey Quinn's just as good as him, and he's cheap. Trey Quinn can do everything Jamison Crowder can do. Jamison Crowder has twice as many catches and three times as many yards and twice as many touchdowns and impacts games way more than Trey Quinn does. He just does. We could pretend like that's not the case, or we could just acknowledge the numbers of their entire careers at this point. Now, maybe Trey Quinn ultimately develops into something. Crowder's only 26, by the way. So he's got still some developing and a lot of football and growth ahead of him as well. But you see that? I mean, I guess if we're talking about Preston Smith and Jamison Crowder at the risk of annoying a lot of people because they don't want to hear about Kirk Cousins anymore, I mean, he yesterday played a really good game against the Cowboys, improved to 5-0 in the division since leaving against NFC East teams.
Wasn't he the NFC Offensive Player of the Month in October?
Sure he was. I mean, he's leading the NFL in quarterback rating. He's got the most touchdowns, the highest yards since week 5. 18 touchdowns and 3 picks. Now, I think it's preposterous that people are talking about him as an MVP candidate.
That's way too high.
Dalvin Cook is the MVP probably of that team. But understand that Cousins has been marvelous.
You put him in a nice situation when Thielen's right and Diggs is right and Cook is right. Ta-da! Good offense ensues. Who would have thought that was the case, right? If you ask Matt Ryan, hey, go out there without Julio Jones or without, you know, Austin Hooper this week and throw to Ridley and you know, name that Jag, is he going to be as good? No, obviously not. So he's a dependent guy. He's not a superstar. And the idea that he was supposed to be, and you'll be let down if that's what you're asking for. But the point, I think, generally is...
Guys
are leaving here and finding better situations. And what always struck me about this, I mean, think of just this one little instance, right, where we always would hear that their play-action game with the Redskins under Jay Gruden and company didn't line up with their running game. And what kind of running game do they want to have? The first couple of years of Jay Gruden, they were still kind of partly using some Shanahan runs, but, you know, because that's really not his thing, and they have their own passing game coordination. All these different things. This is what we do. This is our fit. This is the kind of guy we want for our fit, right? We're the New England Patriots. We'll find a guy that you don't want because he fits what they want to do. The Redskins just sort of go, hey, this is a good player. Let's try to do this. There's not that simpatico over the years system thing. Like, think of the Seahawks, right? You know exactly what they're looking for when it comes to a cornerback. You can think of it right away in your mind. What do the Redskins want? I don't know.
You know who's still great, by the way, is Lorenzo Alexander.
Still playing.
36 years old, making plays yesterday against the Cleveland Browns. Someone should write a book about that guy's career. What a unbelievable journey that's been. Grant and Danny on the Fan, best TV character from your TV shows that you watched all time. There's a list that came out. We'll dissect it next for our double play on the Fan. Does not start Sunday against the Jets. We'll get into that next hour. But let's get to our double play. What's going on in our lives? Nothing to do with sports. So saw this, Danny. I told you it was fun, and I jotted down the top 10. And because I had to jot down the top 10 and actually write it out, because of how terrible the website was, where I had to click through a bunch of slides.
Oh, I hate them.
I don't even know what website it was, and I'm not even going to worry about it now because it was so annoying. I can't go back and find it. But just know, some website put together a list of the best characters in TV show history, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now, they did a weird bit where they listed the Seinfeld cast as number one.
Like, it's such a cop-out.
It's a little bit of a cop-out. I need to know, are you talking Jerry? Are you talking Kramer? Are you talking Elaine? Are you talking George? I mean, it could have been anybody, I guess.
Good little George dropping
Thank
right there.
You very much.
Summer of George.
That was better. But it could have been any of them, but they said the Seinfeld cast in general, number one character TV show history.
Drop out there. Cop out, rather. Not a dropout. What does that mean?
A college dropout. Kanye's best album. Mary Richards, Mary Tyler Moore, second. That's not really for me. I didn't know anything about that show, but I understand that that's a character everybody loves.
It was a huge deal, honestly. You know, right around the time of Lucille Ball, for this woman who was big on a different show to get her own spinoff, and it was wildly successful. She was a beloved character. Again, it's not for me, not my time. And I will definitely skew more recently, by the way.
Tony Soprano, The Sopranos, listed third.
Damn right.
For me, that's in the conversation of number one in my lifetime.
It was my number one until somebody came along and knocked it off.
Unseated it.
Yep.
Wow.
He was incredible.
I would not have thought of this one. I think this is actually really good, though. Liz Lemon, 30 Rock, fourth.
Too high for her, but a good character.
Way too high, but I'm glad she got a little run.
Sure.
Don Draper, Mad Men, listed fifth.
Again, a little too high for me, but outstanding. Did you ever do that show or did you not do it?
I have not done the show, but I have seen episodes. I love Don Draper and I love John Hamm's character.
A, the show is incredible. B, you almost want to live in that world.
Yeah.
But then you realize like guys that are like 32 or 33 are considered old because of what they did to themselves. You know? So you're like, yeah, I'm good now.
And lived some hard
life. I'll mix in a salad and not smoke
hard,
a drink.
Hard. Yeah. Lucy Ricardo, I love Lucy, again, way before my time, but I get it.
Deserves a ton of credit.
Walter White, Breaking Bad, number seven.
That's too low for old WW. There's a spoiler alert for me.
Oh, really?
Yep.
That up the board.
That's the best character in TV history.
That's 1-1?
That's my 1-1.
That's Strasburg in 09, Harper
right.
in 10?
That's 1.
Garrett Cole in 11?
That's correct.
Okay. We'll come back to that. Homer Simpson. Mm-hmm. Cartoons count? I guess they do.
Yeah.
Number eight?
One of the longest running shows ever.
I'll say I'd never watch The Simpsons, and I don't care about The Simpsons, but in terms of the amount of content about any one character, Homer Simpson being number eight feels right.
It's one of the great, long-running, it's not just a one-note joke either, but he's like a little too dumb,
right.
But it is the satirical commentary on all of us. He's us, and that's kind of the point. It's great.
They did their move again at number nine, where they said, the cast of Friends. First of all, I think that's too high for any one character in Friends. In the top 10, even though you could say it's one of the 10 greatest shows ever, is Phoebe or Monica or Rachel or Ross, one of them are a top 10 character ever in TV?
You involved Ross, and for the first two seasons, he just goes, hi, where's Marcel? Hi. He sucks. He's a whiny
Who's
suck.
Marcel?
He's his dumb monkey.
Okay.
He's the worst. Ross is the worst on that show. Rachel's whiny, Monica's hilarious, Chandler's hilarious, and Joey's great. Everything else is filler.
10, Michael Scott of The Office.
Yep.
Michael Scott of The Office has to be way higher to me. That's a top five TV show character of all time.
He's tremendous.
Again, you talk about the ability to, like, years later, the quotability and references to a character withstands the test of time.
It's doubly hard because Ricky Gervais's David Brent, the character that it's based on, the British Office, which only lasted two seasons plus a Christmas special, was iconic.
Yeah.
He was amazing. Michael Scott not only made it his own, but to the point where you're not always comparing the two, if that makes sense. He was great. Steve Carell was amazing in that.
If you want to talk supporting characters, Dwight in The Office, also very, very good character. But give me you said Walter White number one, so give me a thought on that, and then give me someone else that should be pictured in the top 10.
The complexity of this guy that under the guise of wanting to do right by his family when he gets a terminal cancer diagnosis really was just about a guy that was bad at its core. He wanted to, he sort of pretended that he was doing this bad thing for the benefit of others, and ultimately you knew deep down he was doing it for himself, and he admitted as much in one of the final episodes of the show. The manipulation, the evil, the terrible things that he did, and yet you still find a way to root for him. A, because the actor is incredible. I mean, that guy was as good as anybody you'll ever find, but that Walter White character captivated us, and that's one of the great shows ever, if not the best show ever. Breaking Bad was a 10 out of 10. It never, never disappointed.
Give me your underrated character that you'd put in your top 10. A lot of people wouldn't.
Omar Little from The Wire.
Omar from The Wire was one of mine.
Needs to be mentioned.
Such a good character.
He was supposed to be a bit part, I think, but he just crushed it to such a degree they went, okay, this has to be a recurring character. He's amazing. I'd offer Tyrion Lannister from Game of Thrones. What a unique, different thing, right? We've seen warriors, knights before who are like, you know, multidimensional. A guy in a world that's unforgiving and uncompromising who has his deficiencies, not only thrives, but finds a way to survive and kind of continue through when everyone else around him goes. But I like that. I like that list. That's not as terrible as I thought it was going to be.
No, it's not bad at all.
But those are the two I'd add in.
This show's not good enough to get this type of attention. A lot of people listening probably never saw this show, and you should see it because it's really good. But if we're just talking quality of character, mm-hmm. I think you can agree with me on this. Your boy got steamed up for Will McAvoy in The Newsroom. I thought that character was incredible.
A really well-drawn
if
character,
If Dar speaks today, you'll hear the theme of The yeah. Newsroom. It'll be the first time you've thought about The Newsroom in a while. But in terms of just a character, the way that they built him up, the way that you know he kind of carried the show, I love that character.
And so I know I skew more recently, but I don't apologize for that because I really do believe this. I believe television is better than it's ever been.
There's no doubt.
Because just the layers and layers of incredible content where the bar just kind of keeps getting raised. I mean, think of some of these tentpole shows like that AMC has, you know, with Mad Men that we referenced, and of course Breaking Bad. HBO did this with a number of their television shows. That's what's changed. That's where the I don't want to say that's where the money is, but that's where the best bang for your buck is at this point.
You said you did see Mindhunter, or you haven't?
I have. So I haven't seen the most recent season yet because my wife is out on it.
Okay, how many seasons are there? Two?
I think it's two.
Okay, so I'm on season two now.
Yeah.
Tench. I love that.
Bill Tench is perfect.
Not one of the greatest characters ever by any means.
But he's
Holden
a G-man.
Holden is annoying and yeah. kind of whiny, and I don't really love him. But Bill Tench, who's played by Holt McCallany. I don't know what else that guy's in.
I'll tell you what he's in.
So good.
You would recognize him as the guy in, why am I blanking this? Edward Norton, Brad Pitt, Fight Club. He's the guy that says, in death, he has a name. His name is Robert Paulson. That's that guy. And he's aged not that great. Yeah, but Bill Tench is a perfect G-man.
He also, I think, is he plays like the co-pilot, I think, in Sully is the last thing I saw him.
Oh, I didn't see that.
Memory serves. Or he's in that movie in some capacity.
But there's so many. Think of like Fraser Crane, who was on Cheers. And that, you know, again, kind of a one-note joke where he was smarter than everybody else, but was at the same bar. They did a spinoff, and the show was amazing. That's the kind of thing that is incredible, playing one like a one-note character for that long. But just so dynamic and so good. There's a million you could pick from.
Beltway Blitz at noon. Any chance Haskins doesn't start on Sunday at 12:18 right here on Grant and Danny?
I'm a Ted Britt guy. Let me tell you about it. I'm going a couple different times. In fact, let me amend that. Let me make sure that I'm truthful and forthright with ye people. Three different times a Ted Britt customer right here. This guy, okay? Back in the day, many moons ago, we got ourselves a Ford Edge from Ted Britt Ford. We loved it. Great deal, great buying experience, best in town for my money. I've been buying cars for a long time. We loved it. Loved the whole thing. And I said to my wife, when it's my turn to go get myself a car, I'm going right back to Ted Britt Ford. And so I did. Got myself a Fusion. She's parked downstairs right now. Then our lease was up with the old Edge. So we're like, what do we want to do? Well, we got an even better deal on the new Edge that the lady wife is pushing out in the boot. It's great. I love these guys, and you will too. It's the season to change right now at Ted Britt Ford, your F-150 HQ. Plenty of things to choose from. Like, I don't know, how about $11,000 below MSRP on a 2019 F-150? How about $8,000 off a 2019 Ford Mustang? How about $7,000 off a 2020 Ford Explorer? That's right, 2020 is almost here. You don't even need Hugh Downs and Robert Walters to tell you about it. The year is almost here. Go see my guys at Ted Britt Ford, Fairfax, Chantilly, click away, Ted Britt. When you go, tell them you.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.